Yes, today I am once again rejoined by the one and only sports journalist, author, ESPN contributor, Scoop Jackson. Scoop, what's going on?
Nothing, man. How you doing? Happy pre-fourth or whatever.
What's going on, man? It's been a hectic, crazy year, man. Jeez.
Yeah. It's been one that we've never seen before. But, you know, as we've shown in the past, you know, we deal with it and survive and, you know, keep surviving. So, you know, just add it to the list.
Right.
Add it to the list.
Definitely. Yeah, first this COVID-19 came through, put everything on hold. And then the most recent, social injustice came up again. And now this has been ongoing for a long time. But this most recent one, the George Floyd, was just crazy. If that's the right word to use. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And like I said, but it's been so continual. You know, it's funny because I remember at the end of 2019, everybody was like, let's hurry up and get to 2020. Let's hurry up and get to 2020.
Right.
And we kind of had maybe a month. I don't even know if it was that long. When did Kobe pass away?
It was January, right?
Something like that, yeah. So we really barely got a month in. And
right.
That hit us. And then, like, 6 weeks after that, the virus hit us.
Right.
You know, and then after that, you know, you had, Ahmaud getting killed, and then news of Breonna, and then the video release of George Floyd getting killed, and you stack all of that, not just the medical situation dealing with the virus, but how it, like, just affected our, you know, living system.
Right.
And, our economics and how that broke down and affected us as black folks. You know, everybody had to deal with the virus, but inside of just dealing with the health hazard that the virus was, we had to deal with, you know, unproportionate death rates and collecting the viruses as African-Americans that were unparalleled in other races in this country. And, you know, the employment factor where we all have the highest unemployment.
Right.
The first ones affected on that end, too, you know, and, you know, so first ones to lose a job, the first one to have to go out there and keep the jobs that were in the service industry that helped our numbers go. So you add all that into that coming into, you know, when they started to have these slow releases in various cities and we enter back into society
right.
with three black deaths at the hands of, you know, white America. So, it's so much going on, you know, stacking on stacking. That, you know, we've, you know, not to play any pun on it, but it's been hard for us to breathe, man.
Yeah.
It really has been hard for us to breathe, you know, much more than just, you know, from a societal issue, just from a human standpoint, because, like I said, these are just layers on top of layers since January. We've just been dealing with it.
It's crazy. Yeah, you recently wrote an article of what's going on. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah, The Awakening. Yeah, I got there's a local newspaper here in Chicago called independent newspaper called New City. And when everything was breaking down, they called me and asked, could I write something for them? Because they were asking different journalists, writers, poets, MCs, you know, just basic creatives around Chicago to kind of, you know, express through what they did in their craft to express the feelings and the sentiment and, you know, what was going on in the moment, not just from a city standpoint, but from a, you know, from a racial standpoint, from a gender standpoint, from an economic standpoint, from, you know, what we were seeing, what we were dealing with, what we had problems dealing with, you know, what we just where we were.
Right.
In that moment, and I was one of the people they reached out to, and you know, I just took 3 days and kind of consumed everything I could, and everything we were consuming, just about, you know, just watching the news and talking to people and all this and the other we were doing, you know, prior to that.
Right.
But and this was written like a month ago, so it wasn't new. So it was written a month ago. But I really just try to look at what wasn't being said and what needed to be said.
Okay.
And I'm one of those individuals that I was kind of indifferent of the moment, and I didn't include that in the piece. I don't think I have to remember, because like I said, I wrote it about a month ago. But I didn't include it in the piece because I was indifferent about what was going on, and I saw the shift, you know, post – well, right in the middle of it, because it happened right after the protests started and some of the you know, some of the rioting was going on in larger cities and small pockets and this, that, and the other. But, you know, you started seeing the protests going on, and then in the crust of that, you started to see white people and white America all of a sudden no longer listening to us. They all of a sudden started hearing us.
Right.
And, you know, and then seeing our reaction to that. And then, you know, a lot of white Americans, everybody started to get this, and I started to hear everybody say this about their white coworkers, about their white friends, about white people they didn't even know. You know, now the question was, you know, what can I do? What can we do? And I was kind of indifferent about that because a lot of black folks were like, oh, now y'all, you know, now you all finally, we got your ear. You know, this is what you all can do. And I, on the other end, was kind of indifferent about that. Like, why are you all listening now?
Right.
You know, I get the shift in things, but I couldn't figure out why they were listening now. And I'm like, are you listening out of fear or are you listening out of compassion? Are you hearing us now because of fear or are you hearing us now because of compassion? And that's kind of where I was when it came when it came time to me to put that pen to paper and script the piece that New City asked me to script. So I just was like, you know what, let me tell what I believe is not just my truth, but the truth. And it all centered around the answering to that question of what can we do. And that, and to me, you know, you're not going to, I'm not going to be the one to answer that question for you, because you all know, you all have known the answer to that question for a long time.
Right.
So I'm going to reduce this 30-minute conversation into one word, is y'all need to change. And you don't need me to tell me what that looks like. You don't need me to tell you what that is. So I found a way to take one word, change, and direct it at them into a 4,000-word piece.
It was a good read. I like the way you mentioned, like, first COVID came and then social injustice came and took over from where it really never stopped coming.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It was a good read.
Yeah, because you have to understand, and that goes back to why, you know, and that's something we as black folks don't really understand sometimes of where our pain comes from and what we do with pain, and that's why I tried to make it a point in that piece.
Right.
To basically break down pain.
That's true.
And how in that piece you really come to the clue that pain is really undefinable. There's so many layers to it, so many levels to it. You know, it's hard to pinpoint how you react to pain, because there's so many levels of pain, and we all deal with so many different types of pain all at the same time. So when we're looking at television, are we out in the streets? And that's been the age-old question in situations like this. Why do we black folks destroy our own community? You know, why do we, you know, take apart situations and direct our anger at people or institutions that are not necessarily our direct problem?
Right.
You know, that's hard for us sometimes to understand. You know, and it's definitely hard for other folks to understand. You know, and in breaking that down, that's why I felt it was important in this particular time to use this piece to really strategize what pain we were talking about. And it wasn't just the pain of George Floyd, of seeing George Floyd get killed.
Right.
It was the pain of coming out of dealing with how this pandemic affected us more than it affected every other race in this country. And for the, you know, for some of the doors to be open for us to, while everybody was being locked down and locked in.
Yeah.
You know, well, you know, white America had to live with 4 months of lockdown. We didn't deal with it for 400 years. So, you know, we're coming into this work. We're coming back into society after a lockdown, and this is what we're greeted with.
Right.
So you're not just dealing with our pain of trying to survive a pandemic that, like I said before, disproportionately affected us more than any other race in this country. But then we enter into it with a sense of reality that nothing's changed.
Right.
That we're still dealing with the same stuff. And you're talking about in the span, and I think I did, in the span of like a week or whatever, like, bam, you know, Ahmaud Arbery gets killed. You know, we hear about Breonna Taylor and then George Floyd. And it's back to back to back. This is within like a week. So here, Black America walking back into America.
Yeah, and then hear about the hangings we was in Atlanta. It's crazy.
It just started coming
crazy.
And that's why I tried to stress in the piece. It's like, we're not tired. We're over.
Right.
This took us over. We're over. We're done. It's over. So our reaction is not that of what you expect to be normal at this point in time.
Right.
Because, it was like the perfect tsunami in a bad way, in the worst way. You know, and I tried to convey that feeling, you know, in that piece here. So I thought that was important. And I hadn't seen or read anybody combine the two, because everybody was looking at them as separate issues. But I looked at it as like, no, this is just continuing.
Right.
This comes off the back end of that. You know, and I didn't even go into the Kobe factor into the piece because, you know.
Yeah,
but see, that's because now you're dealing with something that's not really affecting everybody. As big as Kobe's death was, it's still only connected to those who were Kobe fans and Kobe people, and that doesn't speak to the same amount of people that the virus does, or the deaths of these Black Americans did. So, but still, to a lot of us, that's the third piece. a lot of us are dealing with those three, so it's not just the two that's continual. It's the death of Kobe leading into the virus, leading into the death. You know, so it's all that.
Yes, I'll never forget when I heard the news about Kobe. I kept saying, this got to be a joke. It's got to be a joke. And then more reliable media sources started reporting. I'm like, oh, my God. I just, like, lost it. Like, serious? Like,
yeah.
Crazy. Like.
Yeah, it is. It is crazy. So, yeah, so I tried to paint as strong a picture as I possibly could to deal with truth and not soft-shoeing and not being politically correct, but dealing in what I felt white America needed to be told.
Right.
Whether they hear it or not is a whole different thing, but they needed to be told this, and it needed to come from us. Like, you know what? All the BS aside, you know, here's, you know, this is on you all. And I, once again, you know, this is a conversation that, you know, we don't need to have. Everybody's talking about, you know, we need to, like, start the conversation and have serious conversation. No, we don't. Black people, we have been talking about this for 400 years amongst ourselves. We've been talking to you all about it for 400 years.
Right.
So, you know, the only change that's going to come of this is when you all talk to yourself.
Right.
We're out
true.
Of it. We're out of it. And so that's kind of that's kind of where I was when I scripted that.
Yeah, and a lot of people need to realize people vent differently and handle anger differently. There's not just opportunities out there that was looting. That was some people were really fed up, and that's why they vented their anger.
Right. Right.
Right.
And like I said, but once again, that's why I tried to literally break down as much as I could the entire definition of pain.
Right.
You know, and the different types of pain. And, you know, to lend itself to you understanding that, you know, there may be 16, medically I think there are 16 different types of pains that you can attach to a human being. Some of them psychological, some physical, you know, but they're all pain.
Right.
You know, and all of that is what is going through us in this moment. And we're expressing all of those pains simultaneously.
Right, so.
You know, so how are you going to predict somebody's going to react like that is impossible.
Very true. Speaking of listening now, Colin Kaepernick, he took that knee. He's got pushed out of the NFL. Now he's being recognized for his actions. Like, okay, you see what you were doing it for. But you should have seen what he was doing it for back then. I mean, NFL would have come out and said he's welcome back into the league. But I think Roger Goodell and the whole NFL need to apologize to him. Like, publicly apologize to him. Because now they see what he was doing it for, but it took another Black man dying for him to see it.
I think, in real talk, I think it took more than just a Black man dying to see it. I think that really like stepping back and trying to come to an answer, like I said earlier, why are you doing this out of fear? Are you doing this out of compassion? The same thing applies to Colin Kaepernick's situation. Like, why all of a sudden are you acting the way you should have been acting 4 years ago, Roger?
Right.
Why are you acting the way you should have been acting 4 years ago, NFL? You know, what's going on? But I think it's so – I've come to the conclusion it's so much more than that. And it's the layers that had to all happen that added up to why this reached the point that it did from an NFL perspective and basically from America finally hearing our screams.
I believe the protest played a huge part.
Well,
that's why people were fed up.
Yeah, but it's more about being fed up. You have to, you know, in America, we're not heard unless our blood is on the floor, you know, and unless there is some direct physical activity that impacts them. You know, we can't just say raise our hands and put our fists in the air and scream. It has to be some physical damage done in order for us to almost be taken seriously.
Okay.
You know, and so that had to happen. But in this particular case, and this is part of the reason I don't think it happened 4 years ago, you know, is because, one, there wasn't this feeling or understanding what we were under as far as the country dealing with Trump as president.
Oh, yes. Jesus.
You know what I'm saying? So, but even though I think there was a lot of us, and I'm not discluding, like, I'm just not talking about white people. I'm talking about black people and all of our liberal-minded individuals that, you know, still believe in that quote-unquote sense of hope, you know. And you can go back and look at all the newscasts and listen to all the interviews and all these people talking about how, let's give him a chance. He may be different once he gets in all that BS, you know, that we fell for, you know, and thinking that, you know, he was going to change and be somebody different once he got in office. When
right.
that didn't happen, now we're dealing with the fact that we've dealt with this and some of us expected that change, or the ones that didn't expect the change are still dealing with it over a four-year period has, you know, kind of escalated our patience. So you're dealing on the back end of patience, but 4 years ago there was patience, and now the patience has run its course with everybody who's living in this country right now.
Right.
You know, so the Trump factor is important, but also what has to be understood, and this is what I think is the most important, is that for the first time maybe in the history of America, I have to really go back and see if there's ever been a situation like this, even, you know, in the 30s, you know, when the Great Depression kicked in.
Right.
But this, from a financial standpoint, was at least the first time since that time, since the 30s. But there wasn't a racial divide. It was strictly economics. White America has never been this vulnerable. Like, white America has always had the foundation of economics on its side. And that's been the strength of their foundation.
Right.
It's how strong it is economically. This virus... Everybody was affected. You know, Wall Street was affected. Businesses, small and large, were affected. Individuals.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was affected by this. And when you're dealing with money in America, that eats at the core of white America's basic, you know, vulnerability. When they have money, they're good. Without money or the access to it or knowing where it's coming from, they become
right.
vulnerable. So for the first time, really, in the history, you had them being so vulnerable that they had no choice but to listen.
Yeah, that's something like the Redskins owners telling me about to change the name of the Redskins because corporate America said you need to change
exactly.
it.
Exactly. You take that
yeah.
exact situation and spread it across this entire country, and you understand what I'm saying about vulnerability.
Yeah.
They've
yeah.
never been at this place. Snyder said, "I'll never do this," but look at the situation he's in.
Yup. Yup.
And it goes to the fact that it's not just him that's vulnerable; it's the people that are not dealing with him that are vulnerable too.
Very
so
true.
It's the larger situation: the Microsofts, the Nikes, all these people. Like, no, we ain't messing with you anymore because they're vulnerable too. Their bottom line are being affected by what's going on out here.
Very true.
So they have to hear us now because if they don't hear us, there is a chance of them losing everything. But you have to understand, all of this had to come together in order to happen now at this point. in order for them to finally hear us. Because without them being vulnerable, they're not hearing us. They're listening, but they're not hearing us. Without
right.
Trump having a full run, you know, over a, the 4 years to see what a four-year presidency of him looks like,
right?
They're not hearing us. They're listening, but they're not hearing us. So you have to add those two things into a factor, you know, before you understand of, you know, why all of a sudden these things are changing now as opposed to not changing 4 years ago.
Right. There are some things changing. I see this is like a different movement. You can see some changes happening. We need more, but we have some things changing right now.
Again? Hello?
Oh, hello? You there? Okay.
Yeah, I got you. Go ahead. Say it again, man.
I said we do have a lot of changes happening right now. We need, like, more structural changes, but we have some things moving. So we need, like, some new laws made and everything. But.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But you know what? Here's what's interesting to me because I'm a little older. You know, to see these changes happen without any, quote-unquote, structural leadership,
right,
you know, is almost what makes this thing so powerful. You know, if you look at the history of black Americans in this country, just look at the history of black America.
Right.
Anytime we fought for something, the structural leadership was always in a place where you could chop off our heads and leave us scrambling and not knowing what to do next.
Sure.
You know, whether it came in the form of Dr. King, whether it came in the form of Malcolm X, whether it came in the form of Marcus Garvey, you know, whether it came in the form of Robert Kennedy, you know, whether it came, whoever that person may be, you know, and even if they didn't find a way to remove them physically, they found a way to remove them conscientiously and get them to sell out, whatever
right.
part of the movement they were part of. But that was because we were dealing with structural leadership. You know, so that, you know, building our structure by using the shape of a pyramid, you know, that had to change. And right now we're dealing with a movement where it's not shaped like a pyramid. It's almost shaped like a line. You don't know where to go to stop this thing, but it's a line that keeps moving forward.
Right.
You know, so
right,
you can cut out part of the line, but the line is still moving. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's a beautiful thing. But our needs and our wants and our demands are so universal, you don't need one person to speak for us. You don't need two people to speak for us. You don't need one organization to do this. No. We're coming at you from all angles, everywhere, and we're all in unison demanding the exact same thing, you know, which is something unique in this country because usually we have been able to come into the game possibly wanting more than one thing and then been fragmented because these people are asking this, these people are asking this, they want this, they want, you know. Okay,
right.
Now we're going to deal with joblessness. Nah, but you know what? They got jobless situation problems in Philadelphia. Chicago's not dealing with jobless situation. They're dealing with educational problems. And now Chicago has to deal with education. Ah, but guess what? You know, Miami doesn't have any of the problems. They're dealing with straight politics in Miami. You know what I'm saying? So Miami got a whole different
right.
problem with black folks. So it was always able to get fragmented, but this particular time, there
yeah.
is no separation. We all are on the same page and want the exact same thing, you know, and to not have to answer or speak to anybody, like Dr. King had to go speak to President Johnson. You know,
right.
we don't have to go up to, you know, a Senate committee and have somebody speak on behalf of us to tell us exactly where no, man, we're taking this to the streets. We're taking this to everybody. You know, we're taking it to the Senate without having to go to the Capitol Hill. We're taking it to Wall Street without having to go to Wall Street. You know what I'm saying? We're taking it to corporate America without having to stop, you know, we don't have to be at Bill Gates' door. We don't have to
right.
be at Microsoft's door. We don't have to be at Nike's door. We don't have to be at Starbucks' door. You know, we don't have to be at the doors of every bank in America. No. Mm-mm. You all know exactly what we want. Make it happen. And that's the beauty of it is that, you know, the structure of leadership has changed so much and is so different in this particular movement than it has in any other movement we had. For me, it's a beautiful thing to see, especially
yeah.
knowing how the other movements that we've had in play, how
right.
easy it's been for those to be shut down from a leadership standpoint.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, Trump is on some other shit. He, whatever day he tweeting out some other shit, not even pertaining to what's going on in the country. But him not moving is helping the movement. Understand what I'm saying? So
yeah, exactly.
It's working out. It's working out.
Yeah, but he's doing exactly what he's been doing all his whole life and everything he's been during the campaign. Everything. I mean, once again, my biggest problem was you all, there was a lot, when I say you all, you know, I'm generalizing, but there were so many people that were hoping and wishing that he would change. You know, and I'm like, this man is 70 years old. I don't know what makes you think,
right.
You know, he's going to change. It's not going to happen. He is who he is. You know, and that's worked out for him. You know, I don't know when you think people, you tell me, man, when have you seen somebody find success? And because of that success, change. What got them that success? You know, usually change comes with failure.
Right.
It doesn't come with like, hey,
right.
This got me here, so now I'm going to change. No. If this is what got you here, you're gonna stay with that.
Yeah,
that doesn't happen. Human beings don't function that way. So I don't know where there was this expectation that once Trump got into office, he was going to be somebody different. I don't get that.
Yeah, that wouldn't make any sense. You're absolutely right. Yeah, the NBA is returning, and they're going to have Black Lives Matter on the courts, WNBA courts, NBA courts, so that it doesn't take away from the movement that's going on right now. I'm glad. I'm just one good thing they're doing. They're going to have some the players going to be able to change the name on the back of their jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be a good thing also.
I think all of it, because, well, you know what? Here's the thing. It's all a good thing, but in this particular thing, it's a good thing because of presence, you know, it's reminded. But the one thing I don't want to get caught up in is, and this is dealing with corporations as well, and I think the NBA is doing, you know, a lot of the right things. But we can't reduce this movement to just be about symbolism.
I understand what you mean.
Right. It just can't be, hey, we put Black Lives Matter on the court and we allowed y'all to message on things that we're good.
Yeah.
You know, can we get beyond this? No, it's so much more than that. And the NBA and all sports, especially the NBA, you know, what the NBA has to recognize is that even though you are still presenting yourself as being connected to the movement, the fact that the players won't be able to engage physically in the movement because of the way the structure of them restarting the season is, you know, you got to understand that just putting Black Lives Matter on a court or having something on the back of a jersey is not the same. It can't replace that.
Yeah, and I believe the jersey change is only going to be for the first 4 days of the startup. But that, I think, you got to go back to normal jerseys.
Yes.
I don't like that part. I don't. I thought it should be through the whole 3 months of the rest of the season.
Yeah, but you know, come on, man, you know better than that. It's everything's still about marketing now.
I understand.
Let's be fair, and let's be honest, let's be straight up fair. They are still trying to make money back from all the money they lost by shutting down the league, knowing that they can't make it back. But they're not going to just leave, like, easy money on the table.
Right.
And, you know, and unless they're starting to mass produce the jerseys that the players are going to wear,
right,
you know, that connect them to the movement,
right,
you know, they're not going to miss opportunities for jersey sales and identification and, you know, brand identity, you know, in a moment where that's all they got, because they're not getting any concession money, they're not getting any
jersey
sale money. You know, there's a lot of things. So, man, that's too much to ask. Like, nah, they have to be able to get their money at some point. And if it's through, you know, jersey sale, with their splitting, I think the players still even get 57% of merchandise sale that's connected to the league. So even the players are still getting the majority of that. So now, we can't leave that much money on the table. We can't expect that, man.
Yeah, and they also spent over $150 million on the bubble, so that's going to be crazy. But
I'm pretty sure that is a safe number. I think it's more than that. Because I think if you really think about it, just getting it together and making that happen, you know, feeding the amount of people that they have to feed for that amount of time.
Yeah, the rooms, all that shit. God,
that's man. You know, right? That alone is $150 million.
Exactly. Yeah, and you got the media. The media is $550 a day, over $4,000 a month.
Yeah.
Woo,
you know what I'm saying? Ooh, yeah. Right.
Sheesh.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, I think that number is very it's very nice. It's very generous.
Yeah.
That's a very generous number at 150.
Yeah.
Very generous number at 150.
And also about the media, I believe only ten selected media, 10 selected people in media will be able to interview the players. A selected 10. That's crazy. You're paying $550 a day, and you can't interview the players. That's crazy.
I know, but it's a safety issue now. And
yeah,
it's not,
very true.
And
very
the people
true.
I feel sorry for are those media individuals. You know, do you know how much work they have to do? Like, seriously, to get the stories out that they're trying to get told, and the producers that are trying to do it, or editors are trying to do that, it's like, you know, there will be times there will be 4 games a day.
Right.
Right. Now, it's not like you're just covering your local team as you did back in the day, where if you were a writer in New York and you were covering the Knicks or the Nets, or you were writing L.A. and you're covering both the Lakers teams, and that's all you really had to deal with because you're walking for the Washington Times. Or even with your ESPN, they assign you a story a week or a story every other day.
Yeah.
You know, no. Now you're going to be having games going on every day, sometimes 4 games a day.
Right.
And you're one of two people that are working for whoever, you know, because you've been sent out there. You know, that's I feel bad for them, and, you know, that's almost unfair for them because they're the ones that are not going to get any breaks.
Yeah, very true, because when this scrimmage goal starts July the 22nd, it's going to get hectic. As you said, it's going to be at least 4 games a day.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of covers to do.
Yeah. And now you're checking down and trying to get close and get stories together and turn them around, turn decent stories around, and the next day back at it for the team. You know, I'm one of them, so I feel sorry because I wouldn't want that on anybody.
Right.
I wouldn't want that on anybody because at least the players, like, all right, man, you got practice, you got a game, you know, you're done. All right, whatever, you put out the work. But, you know, as a reporter or a writer or a journalist out there, you know, you're right in the middle of it. Okay, this game's over. Okay, go to the next game. All right, this game's over. All right, go to the next one. All right, this game's over. Go to the next one. What about the announcers?
Yeah, that's a lot going to this new, to this.
Right.
To restart. That's a lot.
Right. Right. You got announcers like, okay, man, you know what? All right, like TNT or ESPN, you know, ESPN does game on Wednesday and Friday and maybe a weekend game. TNT does their Tuesday and Thursday, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, each announcer that you go to has their own game. It could be Reggie Miller and Kevin Harlan in one game, then Chris Webber and Marv Albert at another one, right?
Right.
Here's the deal. How many teams are they going to send out there? Not many, because there's a limit to how many media is going to be there, and now they have to do it every day. So as Chris Webber and Marv Albert may get 2 games a week,
right.
They're going to get 8 now.
Right.
Reggie Miller, Kevin Harlan, Mark Jackson, Mike Breen, you know, and Jeff Van Gundy.
Right.
Dude, it's a whole nother grind, on, you know. And to try to keep up with, you know, not only what happened before the restart, you know, but and bring that from an analysis standpoint to the table, but also what happened in that team's last game that once again, you still have to study.
Right, right.
So it's not only that you're not covering it, you have to watch that game and cover it and study it because that team's playing again tomorrow. But that team's playing again the next day. It's going to be interesting how they work this thing out. And so, you know, I feel bad for the teams that are sent down there from a media standpoint because I think it's an understatement to say that they're going to have their work cut out for them.
Yeah, NBA definitely also have the work cut out for them. The scrimmage club is going to help them work out any bugs before they get live. We're going to 29th and the season restarts. So
yeah,
I'm definitely looking forward to it. But it's going to be a job for everyone involved.
Yeah, it's going to be a job for everyone involved. And you know, the fact that you're not going to be able to break away that's what I'm waiting to see. What type of toll that takes on not only the players but the people working the games too. You know, the coaches, the trainers, you know, and, you know, the production people. You know, I don't, you know, I don't know what I don't know what that's gonna be like, man. You know, to have to work under those conditions. At least in the past you're able to float around.
Yeah.
You know, right. And especially dealing with you know, and being in the media as long as I have been, you know, we'll all become creatures of habits and we're comfortable, and you know, we're used to moving around and doing things.
Right.
But to not be able to, you know, see your family or get back to some type of regular routine.
Right.
You know, usually it's cool if you're covering the playoffs. You know, all right, man, you know, I'm assigned to do the playoff run. So, you know, you're all right for the next, you know, from the end of April to the middle of June,
right.
I'll be on and off on the road. But
right.
Guess what? Now you're not on and off. You know what I'm saying? You're not on and off anymore. You're in one place that is not your home with
right.
strangers.
Stuck in a hotel room, basically, which is crazy. Like,
and asked to do either double or triple the amount of work you would be if you were on the road. And you got to turn it around quicker. I wonder when that's going to take a toll. You know what I'm saying?
I definitely understand what you're saying. Because these, some, like you said, these players are used to doing certain things. Like you said, media numbers are. I mean, they just want to make them feel at home as much as possible. Like, I'm going to have barbers there, like, whatever, ping pong, whatever.
Yeah,
I'm thinking they can shoot around, but, I mean, it's going to be different. It's going to be totally different, unprecedented. Like, it's
you're exactly right. And you know that NBA life, the NBA player life is going to be totally different than the life that's going to be available to the media. Just like
yes.
the real life.
yes.
Come
yes.
on, man.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Crazy, man. I mean, Stephen A. Smith will do this to that. Like,
right.
That's going to be crazy.
Right.
Oh,
yeah, everybody's
man.
Under a bubble, but they're going to be bubbles inside their bubble.
exactly.
Hey, my man, that bubble right there, that ain't for you.
Exactly.
That's for LeBron, AD, and Kawhi. That's y'all bubble. Y'all go over there.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's your little media bubble over there. Y'all play over there. No, this is a whole other thing. Yeah, there will be bubbles inside the bubble, trust me.
Yeah, it's going to be totally different depending on what player is. Also, like him and Walker leader, too. He's, like, single. He used to be in the room by himself, but that's not everybody.
So yeah.
We're definitely going to see how this plays out.
Yeah. No doubt.
Because some players might not be able to focus. Players are not able to focus if they were like they are normally. Being with a lot of players, I think players like LeBron that would lock in, but some players are not used to this situation. It's going to affect them on the court. I believe it will.
Here's your thing. This is where leadership comes in.
Right.
This is where leadership comes in, and it goes beyond what you're able to do, you know, on the court. You know, it goes beyond what you're able to do during practice. It goes beyond what you're able to do during timeouts. You know, it's going to be up to maybe not just one leader, but just I'm just throwing out leadership. And
right.
every team has to deal with how their leadership is structured. But to keep everybody focused on that goal,
that's
what leadership is all about. That's what leadership is all about. Now we're going to see what true leadership is all about. In these circumstances, who's going to be able to keep everybody, for the most part, 90% locked in? You know what I'm
right.
saying?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And on top of that, players come out to practice discipline like never before.
Yeah.
Self-discipline on all levels. Like.
Yeah. But here's the importance. And you know what? This may be – it's going to be interesting to see the importance of Last Dance plays in this going out, because the one thing that can be taken from if everybody, especially to watch the Last Dance and they weren't able to really, really know Jordan and that Bulls team, is what we're all in this for and how we
right.
have to stay locked in for this. And it is ability to do this. We just have to do it better than everybody else.
Yes, the Last Dance, Robin going off
right,
the biggest,
right.
still came back locked in. That was crazy.
Right, you know what I'm saying? And
that
hey, look,
special.
Right, but that goes to Michael's leadership and Phil's ability to you kind of direct where that leadership was coming from and how to coexist with that leadership. But it was a lot of it was just Michael's leadership.
Yeah.
You know, and him being so locked in, but getting everybody else to stay on that same page and not deviate. You know, and seeing that, it's going to be interesting to see who's going to take from that and apply it to what they're about to go through now.
Yeah, definitely see that.
it's going to be all hands on deck because this is going to be, as I mentioned, unprecedented because there's no home court advantage. You don't have no fans. It's just you, your teammates, the coaches. You got to go. So everybody, you won't go. Like, you got to
And that's what I'm saying. This is going to be, you know, it's all about leadership. We're going to find out who the greatest leaders are because coming out of this, man, you know, this is one of those situations where I am sure there's a lot of dudes in the NBA are very glad Tim Duncan's still in playing.
Oh, the big fun, yes.
Because he'd be the one dude that could carry a squad through this probably with ease.
Yes, I believe that.
Yeah.
No emotion, just straight work.
Like, yeah, just straight work. Let's go. Let's go. His demeanor, everything about Tim lends itself to do something like this with ease. Have everybody else do the exact same.
Right, because a lot of parents, they play to the fans and play to the crowd. Like, you don't have that. Well, what you going to do?
No, but it was all about the game to him.
Yes, definitely.
It was all about the game with Tim. As long as you got his weed supply guy there, man, he's all
right. Pop should be there, so I mean, he's gonna keep the Spurs in check. So
yeah, but it takes more than that. That's what I'm saying. Pop,
yeah,
outside, of course,
right.
Pop's gonna be Pop. That's easy.
Yeah.
But it's Tim to be that player thing. While Pop's is always focusing on something else.
Right.
Pop's
court,
always
totally
on that bigger picture thing, and that's so necessary. And he's still gonna have that. But it's Tim doing the day-to-day player thing.
Right.
You know, and keeping everybody, and they respected him so much. And like you say, his personality, and he didn't need all the extra. He needed any of that. It was like, yo, let's just stay focused. Let's just stay locked in. And he's done it so many times.
Right.
You know, and he did it in such a, you know, he did it in ways Michael didn't. He did it in ways Kobe didn't. He did it in ways, you know, hell, that other, you know, hardly anybody was able to do it the way he was able to do it. You know, Magic couldn't do it. That Larry could. Tim was so just. You know, it was a different type of lock-in. And he never allowed any distractions or anything get to him because he kept everything so simple. And
very
when
true.
You have everything, like you said, taken away from you, all the distractions, your whole life has been taken and reduced to, like, really staying in this one moment with nothing else. It's like, man, I do this every day. Just follow my lead. Just follow me.
Right.
You know, it's a difference between, like, following somebody, like, you know, Malcolm X and following Gandhi.
Right.
You know, Malcolm liked the noise. You know what I'm saying? You put Malcolm in Harlem, he's like, this is it.
Right.
I'm good. You know, Malcolm liked the distractions. You know, all the targets and everything that white America put on him and, you know, anything outside of the nation, all that. Malcolm was cool with all that. I got this. It's fine. You know, but you put Malcolm, like, in having to do with the surroundings that Gandhi had to deal with, all that simplicity. Oh,
yeah.
What's this? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It'll be an adjustment. But, you know, Tim Duncan is Gandhi-like. So he's like, oh, everything's taken away, and all we have to deal with is this.
Yeah.
I got
it. That's easy work.
Easy work. Easy. And basically, y'all just listen. And, you know, when you have someone that has led, you know, the team, the way Tim Duncan led them, it's easy to listen to because he shows you, he gets you results.
Very true.
Yeah. He gets you results.
Yeah, his historic Hall of Fame class got pushed back because of COVID-19. I can't wait to see him get enshrined. I can't wait. It's a historic class. Can't wait to see Kobe get honored. I was looking forward to speaking to Kobe, and then that happened. I was like, I wasn't like mad or sad because I wasn't able to speak to him, just the loss of the NBA overall. I'm like, he's really gone. It still don't seem real. Like,
yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Well, it's going to be a historic class. Can't wait.
I can't wait either. And you know what? As I was talking, I just thought about that. We actually possibly do have, I would say everybody should be glad Tim Duncan's not there. We actually do have somebody in a similar situation that can actually do it. And we just saw him do it last year. It's just he's with a new team, and that's Kawhi.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah. Kawhi is his easy from what we were talking about. He's the exact same as Tim Duncan. The only difference is that he's leading cats that he hadn't been around.
Right.
There are but the fact that you just pulled one out that you just did last year, it may be easier for them to follow his lead.
Yeah, and he has a way better supporting cast this year. Like,
yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Clippers deep as hell, man.
Man, no
Cash
doubt.
Cash Beverly, BZ. He got
no
Andre
doubt.
Harrell. Yo,
no doubt.
Yo.
No doubt.
They're going to be a problem for the Lakers, man. They got LeBron and AD, but, oh, my God. The Lakers just picked up on J.R. Smith, but, I mean, look, I don't know, man. It's going to be shit.
I'm with you. I'm with you. You know, I break it down. I've looked at it. I started looking at it during the before this season shut down. I'm like, in the seven-game series, you know, I like what the Lakers have. I love what the Clippers have. But if I had to break down the tipping point, I'm saying defensively. The Lakers have no answer for Lou Williams in the seven-game series.
Yes, he could be a mad X-factor because he come off the bench and
dropped 30, right.
Ooh,
and he could do that in multiple games, and that could be the difference. You know what I'm saying? Especially on a neutral court.
Yes.
Like, and there's nothing there. Avery Bradley possibly was
at all
one person that could have to at least be assigned to Lou if he gets hot.
Right.
You know, and Lou's not that streaky where he gets hot, you know, from, you know, one game to the next. He gets hot and it carries over.
Yes. Yes.
You know, he can have a 3-game run. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And that changes the direction of a series. And unless you got somebody to stop him, and this is somebody who's been in the league for, 13 years or whatever, and he's never really had a chance to really play for anything. This is his first chance to really play for a ring.
Yeah.
And he's going to be ready.
Yeah, and the Clippers got mad bodies to throw at AD and LeBron over
and
over
and
over.
Anybody,
even
if they don't, they got people that can, you know, at least do the exact same thing, even if they don't have bodies. So, you know, whatever LeBron can bring to the table, Kawhi has the ability to match that. You know, whatever PG brings to the table, I mean, whatever AD brings to the table, PG can match. You know, they have players that can actually, like, reduce the impact of what LeBron and AD bring to the table.
And they have enough. And he has an offense to keep the offense going while PG and Kawhi is on the bench resting and bring them back in. Then put Lou back on the floor.
Exactly. You know,
what I'm saying. Lakers got a problem coming, bro.
Yep. And you know as well as I do, playoff basketball is about matchups. So, you know, you can match them up all the line. And the one matchup I don't see is, like, who you all got to stop Lou.
Crazy, man. It's none because you can't. Oh, my God, you can't. Because you got Kawhi and PG on the floor, all your attention is there.
Yep.
Like, it's
you know what?
Like, go ahead.
No, I was about to say, you know what, to me, they should have done? And, I like J.R. Smith. He's fine. But I don't know if he's the answer right now.
He can provide shooting if they need, but, I mean, overall, he might not be enough, man. Like,
no.
Sheesh.
What they should have done, instead of getting J.R. Smith, is they should have got Jamal Crawford.
Yes, he's still there waiting. A problem.
Because while you don't have anybody to defend Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford can do the exact same thing that Lou Williams can. You bring him off the bench.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So now it's like, all right, man, it's like offense on offense.
Yes, it's an offense. Create his own shot.
Right, and that's what I'm saying.
Handle crazy.
Yes.
Can't nobody guard him. Like,
that's my point. And the Clippers don't, and they can throw bodies at him, but he still at least presents the same problem offensively that Lou Williams does.
Exactly. I can't wait
to
start.
So
man.
That's why I thought they should have, like I said, nothing against J.R. Smith. I know LeBron likes his crew. He's always going to look out for his crew. There's loyalty there. But I would have looked at this and been like, okay, you know what? We need Jamal Crawford in just for the Clippers.
Yes.
Just in case we got to go through the Clippers, we need. Because we don't have an answer for Lou Williams, we're gonna create our own answer. We ain't going to try to stop Lou Williams, but we're going to give them somebody that they can't stop either. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's what I would have done.
That would have been a good choice.
Yep.
Somebody need to pick him up because he just sitting there waiting. It's crazy, man. I think last game he played about 50, I believe it was.
It's
crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy,
he's
man.
Good to go, and you don't need anything from him but that.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? You don't need
anything
from him but that.
Get us points for LeBron on the bench. Get us points. Like,
man. And he's so chill and so comfortable in who he is that not even Patrick Beverly can bother him. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, right. Man, right. It's, man, please. Mm. So, yeah, That should have been the Lakers' move as far as I'm concerned. Like, grab Jamal, and that's our answer. You know, that's our counter to what we have to deal with is Lou Williams in the Clippers uniform if we see each other. So,
right. So barring COVID-19 affecting a major player like a LeBron or KD, it's going to be – I want to see that finals matchup still. I want to see that. I want to see that happen. Lakers and the Clippers. I'm sorry. Western Conference Finals. They went to the traditional format. I'm sorry. But, I want to see that. I want to see that finals matchup. That shit going to be crazy, bro.
I know. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy. But, you know, I don't want to sleep on it easy because – Who's alpha Boston? Is Gordon Hayward alpha the whole thing or no?
No, he said it. Well, his wife is due in September. He said he's going to leave when she's going to labor and come back. We got to go through like a protocol, so that's going to have him out for a week. So if they're in the middle of a big battle, let's say like Toronto, that might cost them. Like,
right.
I mean, that's going to be crazy also. So they got to press that in. They got to press that in now.
And when he comes back, doesn't he have to miss 14 days? Doesn't he have to go into quarantine?
Yeah, he got to get retested and all that.
Yeah, so that's
crazy. That's
right.
Crazy.
I think they may rethink that depending on where they are. But I'll say this though, I hear what you're saying about the Lakers and the Clippers. I love to see there's a Western Conference Final.
Right.
In the East though, he said Toronto and Boston would be amazing. Milwaukee and Boston. My thing is that I want to see a Clippers Celtics final. Even though I thought in the beginning of the season I predicted the Lakers and the Celtics.
Yeah.
I like to see a Clippers Lakers because you talk about two things, like you said, the Clippers are thorough. Like they got just players. They just got mad players everywhere.
Right.
Like they just fit. I think the same way with the Celtics, man. They got it's just ball players. Ball players on top of ball players on top of ball players. Like, damn.
Yeah, Brad Stevens doing a good job over there. Kemba just stepped right in. Like he took
Kyrie.
Yeah, Kyrie spot, like, hit like a glove.
Yeah.
More of a leadership person over there. Like, hey.
Yeah, and they still did. And they never really they haven't been healthy all season long. So hopefully, you know, the rest gets them healthy. They're going to be a problem, man. They got literally ball players. Like, okay.
Yes, Tatum is an automatic problem.
Jaylen Brown hooping. you got ball players.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Scoop, thank you for joining me again. It's always a great interview when I talk to you, man. I love talking to you, though.
Appreciate you joining me, man. Anytime, man. Let's make it. Let's make it happen before the season's over.
definitely. I'll definitely check out. Set up another date. Thanks a lot, man.
Anytime, partner.
All right, be safe, bro.
All right, man. You too. We'll talk soon, okay?
Yes, sir.
Thanks for having me on, man. Good talk. Love it.
All right, talk to you soon.
All right, man.
All right. Yes, that was the legendary Scoop Jackson, sports journalist, author, ESPN contributor. Thanks for joining me. Catch you next time.